Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
One more thing. Let me tell you about a new sponsor, Raygun. If you're wanting to detect and diagnose errors and crashes in your software, even find problems that you didn't know existed to improve your software, then Raygun might be perfect for you. You add a few lines of code to your application, and in minutes, you'll get real-time error reports with all the information that you need to fix bugs fast. You can even hook it up to your team chat, bug tracking, development workflow tools. Raygun covers all major web and mobile programming languages, including .NET, the full Xamarin stack, JavaScript, and many more. Go check out Raygun today at raygun.io. I use this myself on my little startup, and I really, really recommend this product. It is a great, great product. Check it out, Raygun at raygun.io.
From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 477. In this episode, Scott talks with Sarah Swidon about the state of SVG on the web today.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today I'm chatting with SVG, CSS, and web expert Sarah Swidon. She is a self-employed front-end web developer, and she's talking to me from Lebanon. Thanks for chatting with me today.
Hi, Scott. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so you have some amazing work online. I've looked at your slide shares, and you've got this great CSS reference. That's when I heard about you the first. It was called the CoDrops CSS reference?
Yes, it is.
And what is this? This is like, it's interactive. It's a whole series of pages and it's like a book.
Exactly. It's practically a book, except that it's online. And it has all kinds of interactions that we would normally miss in a printed book, for example.
Yeah, it's so much more than, you know, we always find ourselves on W3 schools. And, you know, I feel like when you're searching for things on the web and you end up on W3 schools, then you've probably made a mistake.
Yes.
And they're going to tell you, would you agree with that?
Yes, definitely. I always remember whenever someone says W3 schools, I always remember the W3 Fools website. Have you seen that before?
That's great. That's a real place.
Yes. I think it's W3Fools.com. You should check it out.
Oh, my goodness. I feel like W3 schools is something that we should just block from Google. Google search results. It's like experts exchange. You know, if you know if you went there, you have getting a wrong answer.
Well, actually, that's what the W3 Fools website was about. That was the first time I learned that W3 Schools is not really a place you should go visit when you're learning about CSS or whatever. It contains a set of wrong information found on W3 Schools and some. I think there were some quotes from some people. Yeah, you should definitely check it out.
Well, I do very much enjoy wandering around on the CoDrops page here on Timpanus.net, and I will put a link in the show notes, particularly because you'll be reading and seeing code samples, and then right there is a live demo. So it's almost like kind of code pens injected in the page.
Yes, and there's also the updated, hopefully whenever possible, we have a Can I Use table. So the support information, the browser compatibility is always going to be up to date for most entries that have a support table on Can I Use. And yeah, the editor is actually a CoDrops editor. We didn't embed anything like CodePen or other. This was actually Manuela and Pedro's choice, and I loved it. I loved the idea. It's totally independent. You don't have to wait if CodePen or any other website or app is down, your website would be, or your demos would also be down. So this kind of removes an additional dependency, which is always good.
And it also is, of course, with anything that you do, very responsive. It's got quite a few breakpoints. So this is a great reference, you know, on an iPad or a tablet as well.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And then talk to me about this new book. What does this mean, Smashing Book 5? What is that?
Well, it's basically Smashing Magazine does books, and every book has a number. So this year's book has the number 5. And it's we are a set of authors. Each of us writes an article about a different topic that they specialize in. My chapter was about SVG. And there are chapters about Flexbox, performance, web fonts. It's really, really good. Some excellent content is in that book. So it's, yeah, basically just a book published by Smashing Magazine. This is the number 5. And it's co-authored by a lot of authors.
Yeah, it's got a whole bunch of names that I think we would all recognize. And it's also very reasonably priced. It's only $30 right now, and it's 500 pages. It's hardcover. This is the kind of book that you don't just put on your shelf and forget about. It's almost like a coffee table book you want people to see.
It's definitely, yes. The ebook, I think I saw Vitaly's tweet yesterday. It was said the ebook should be out this week, actually. And the printed book, beginning of June, I think.
Yeah, very soon. Perhaps by the time the show is out, people will be able to order that. And again, I'll put links in the show notes. So you did a chapter on SVG. And,
yes.
You know, when I started thinking about SVG, it was many, many, many years ago, and we still needed a plugin. I had to go and download an Adobe plugin to use SVG. That was my first introduction to it.
I wasn't even there by the time.
So you're saying I'm very old is what you just said.
No, I'm saying I always feel like such a noob. Like a lot of developers, most of the developers, if not all of them, all of the people that I know have started developing at least 5 years ago. So they always mention tools and they mention the Flash era and stuff like that. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. But I always feel so shy to even say that. I have no idea what they're talking about. I've been doing this for almost 3 years now. And yeah, there was no Flash era in this time or any plugins needed, I think.
I would never have guessed in just 3 years you've accomplished so much. That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So I think this is really interesting that you bring this up. So I used it many, many, many years ago. And because of my early poor experience, gave up on it. But you used it at a time when it was kind of ascendant, you know, SVG's coming in its own and has great support. Do I have to worry about SVG support anymore? Is it everywhere?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not is the answer of do I have to worry? No, do not worry about it at all. Browser support is excellent. The only browsers that don't support it are IE8 and below. And I think it was Android or Opera Mini. I'm not really sure. But any browser that does not support it, or even supporting browsers, if the SVG fails to load for any reason, we have a lot of fallback techniques. We have so many options. You can embed the SVG on the page in many different ways. I think that the time you were talking about, you used to embed it using an embed tag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but now you have like 7 ways to embed it, and each way comes with multiple fallback techniques that you can provide. So absolutely no worries at all about non-supporting browsers. Definitely 100% ready to be used today.
So why do you think that the kind of the mainstream or perhaps the enterprise developers still look upon SVG with an eye of suspicion?
I'm not really sure. You know, in my latest conference, when I spoke at conferences and after the talk, people will come up to me and start talking about SVG. Mm-hmm. I always still sometimes hear people say, okay, SVG is cool. SVG is awesome. Oh, everything you said is really great, but I wouldn't use it now. I said, why not? They're like, it's not ready yet. And I'm like, yes, it is. It is ready, and I really don't know. I would love to know the reasons behind them. I mean, if it's not ready, you know, this answer is the only reason, then it's mm-hmm. definitely not a valid one.
So is it just FUD? This is just fear, uncertainty, and doubt upon the people who just say, it doesn't feel right, or it's too confusing.
Well, that, and admittedly, there are still some browser inconsistencies and features that are not completely supported in every browser. Like, for example, one of the things that you can do when you're spriting SVG is to reference an external SVG so that you can leverage browser cache and and well, make subsequent page loads faster. Plus you separate the concerns. You have a sprite that contains all of your icons, for example. And whenever you want to edit it, you just go into that sprite and do it. But right now, what you have to do is you have to put that sprite inside of your page, because no version of Internet Explorer allows you to reference an external sprite. So you have to either embed it in line or use some polyfill that people use today. It's called SVG for everybody, which provides fallback for IE. So there are some features that are still not supported in all browsers, but that's not stopping a lot of us from using them.
Okay, so let's unpack, because there was a lot of good information in just that those few sentences. So you said spriting. Let's use the example of a toolbar. You know, someone's going to make a toolbar or a series of icons. One kind of developer would perhaps make a bunch of GIFs or PNGs and then just have maybe 20 of them on the screen, right?
Yeah.
But this is not a good idea anymore, I understand.
Yeah, it's definitely... There is a comment to say here. First of all, we are spriting today because that's going to save us a lot of HTTP requests, which means faster page loads. But with HTTP 2, it's going to make spriting basically obsolete, because the reasons that we usually sprite in SVG to save extra HTTP requests and make page loads faster, we're not going to have to do that anymore, because HTTP 2 is going to take care of all of these things for us. But for now, spriting is basically, if you have a set of icons or a set of images or whatever, you combine them into one image, and then you serve parts of that image on the screen. If you're using a PNG, you would have one PNG file that contains all of your icons, and then you would use CSS background positioning and scaling properties in CSS to only show one part. It's kind of like cropping the sprite to only show one image, one icon or one image inside of it at a time. With SVG, it's very similar.
Okay, so you're programmatically cropping, and this is a little bit of a hack. It's a clever workaround, isn't it?
Definitely, yes.
Okay, but it's a clever workaround to get around a limitation within HTTP, and as you point out, as the underlying features get better, as I like to say, the water level rises, and then, you know, everyone wins, so things just get better from the bottom up.
Yes.
Okay, so then PNG spriting makes sense to me. I can imagine a grid in one PNG filled with all of my little icons. But then, of course, you know, someone gets a Retina display, and then I have big blurry icons instead of little ones. And then I have to make X2 and X4 and all these different versions of the PNG.
Yes.
A friend of mine said that mobile, one of the dirty little secrets about mobile website development is that it's about 5% CSS and about 95% making different kinds of PNGs.
Yeah, that's actually one of the reasons why the picture element in HTML5 got this huge amount of attention, because it helps us provide responsive images for Retina screens and others. Well, we would still have to provide, for example, different like 2x, 3x, 4x, but we would have a semantic syntax to serve those images.
So like you say max width on CSS, you say the same thing with the source of a picture?
Yes, you would say the same thing with the source of the picture. And there are other options where you would not specify a media query, but you would, for example, give the browser a set of options, a set of images, and it would just pick one of them depending on the screen resolution. If you're not working on screen sizes, it would just pick whichever one. There are a lot of options. It's overwhelming, actually, and I definitely don't memorize all of them.
Of course. Well, and that fact that it's overwhelming is, I think, why people look, you know, to experts and designers and developers and people who write books and to tell us, you know, what to do. Mm-hmm. If there's going to be a picture element with, you know, source set and all these different kinds of cool things, does that mean I should, as an enterprise developer, go and do PNGs? Or is it time to do most of my graphics as SVGs?
Well, the really awesome thing is, well, first of all, again, I repeat, you don't have to worry about using SVG at all. Mm-hmm. And actually, the picture element, it's one of the elements that allows you to serve SVG while also providing fallback as PNG. And even the fallback that you provide, you can provide it as 2x, 3x, 4x. So you would have the SVG served in capable browsers, SVG capable browsers, and then provide different PNGs that if you're not lazy, of course, to create all of these. So you would have different PNGs. And if the browser does not support SVG, it would still have different options, different resolutions, different images for different resolutions. So it kind of gives us the perfect fallback mechanism. But you won't always be able to use the picture element to do that, because if you embed an SVG using a picture element, and if you embed it using an image tag or a background image, there are, for security reasons, you won't be able to script the SVG. So if you want to do any kind of animation using JavaScript, you won't be able to do that. There are some limitations when it comes to styling the SVG, because an SVG embedded as an image, for example, you cannot style it from a style sheet that's external. The styles have to be inside the SVG document.
Really?
So yeah, there are a lot of options. Usually what I always tell people is, you have different options. You have to set your goals. You have a set of goals, and then you start specifying, okay, if I need scripting, okay, then that's going to take out the image tag and the picture element and the background image. I'm not going to be able to use those. If I need external styles, for example, if I really need them, then I think the best option would be to use an inline SVG. So yeah, there are different options. And a while back, I was working on a client project. The first thing that occurred to my mind based on what my client required was, okay, I'm just going to use a CSS background image and use media queries. And, you know, I had a set of to-dos or a process to embed the SVG. But then based on other features that he requested, I needed to use JavaScript. So I was only left with object and iframe. I prefer object over iframe any day. But then there was a browser bug in Safari that I had to cancel object and end up using an iframe, which is something I would have never expected. But this happens with SVG. You have a set of options. You have a set of basically everything. You have to weigh things, what you want, what you don't want, what you can compromise and what you can't, and make your choice based on that.
But do you think perhaps that it's nuance like that that caused the people to come up to you and say, hey, I'm worried about SVG not being ready? Maybe it is ready, but it's overwhelming because there's so many options.
It's definitely overwhelming, yes. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of options to do a lot of things. And I still always get a lot of questions that, for me, sometimes sound really basic. I mean, I've been working with SVG for almost a year and I wrote a lot about it. And so at some point, I know this is not right, but at some point I expected, okay, so we're done with the basics. Everybody knows them. We can move forward. But then again, I realized that no, not everyone is done with the basics, because a lot of people are still getting into SVG now. So we have to keep reminding them of the way of ways to do things. Plus, especially, there are a lot of things that are still changing in SVG, like the chapter, the smashing chapter. I was asked to review it a couple of days ago, the PDF version, which was ready. So I was going over it, and then there was this sentence, and I was reading it, and I was like, well, that's not entirely true anymore. So we ended up switching one sentence with a whole paragraph that explains a different thing.
See, this is very overwhelming, because, you know, we always joke and say, you know, has Chrome 99 shipped yet? You know, I don't even know what version Chrome is on. It's 40 something. And literally, you know, the little thing turns, the little hamburger turns green and you have a new version of Chrome. Subtle things change. And who knows? Maybe something changed in SVG. It is very overwhelming.
Yes, it is. But it's also very fun. I mean, I don't know if I like to torture myself, but I really like this. I like having a lot of options, a lot of ways to do this. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the reasons why I find SVG so fascinating, because you're not just limited to, okay, this is the holy grail. You have to do things this one specific way. No, there is nothing like that in SVG.
Right. You know, and I realize this is foolish of me as the host, but here we are almost halfway through our show, and we haven't really talked about what it stands for. It's scalable vector graphics. And I was realizing, as you were saying, how people are just still getting an understanding. I was actually nodding my head and thinking, you know, I know a lot of people who couldn't tell you clearly if they should pick a GIF, a PNG, or a JPEG. And once you throw in vectors, their brains explode.
Well, there are certain criteria that you can follow or keep in mind when you make your choice which image format to choose. If this is your question, which image format? Well, basically, SVG is mostly suitable for, I was going to say vector images, but that doesn't explain it really. Like small illustrations, icons. If you're talking about continuous tone images like photos of landscapes and stuff like that, a JPEG is definitely the answer. SVG is more suitable for not non-continuous tone. I can't find the exact word for that right now.
Right.
Yeah. So, blocks of color. No, not even that works, because you have gradients, you have filter effects, you have all kinds of awesome graphical effects in SVG.
Right.
So if you have an illustration, a drawing, not a continuous tone photo, for example, mm-hmm. SVG might be the better choice. But then again, there are other things to keep in mind, that sometimes if the SVG contains a lot of details, a lot of path elements, a lot of mm-hmm. Graphical effects, you can end up with a file size that's a lot bigger than its PNG counterpart. And in that case, choosing a PNG would be a better choice, because you always have to keep performance in mind.
I see. So you've got to think about the size as it goes over the wire, presumably complexity and how difficult it is to parse that. I mean, I'm sure that there's some work happening in the browser. You've got to think about what it is you're showing. Like, I remember making a declarative statement and saying, PNG is for, you know, good for screenshots. But then if someone puts up a screenshot with a picture of a human face, I'm like, well, you probably should have used a JPEG. And I'll say, but yeah, it was a screenshot. It depends. It all depends,
exactly.
Doesn't it?
Exactly. And I always think that, okay, if a lot of people, if you have an SVG, you're probably, if you're working with SVG, in most cases, not everyone might, but in most cases, they would have a graphics editor, and then they would load the SVG into that editor, maybe to edit it or change something. So when they export the SVG back out again, or if they already created, if they did the creation inside of the editor and then want to export it as SVG, they always have an option to export a PNG fallback anyway. So if all fails, they will always have SVG, PNG, and worst case scenario, they can just look at the sizes. And if there's a huge difference between the SVG and PNG, and SVG is too big, then just use PNG.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I think for me pushes me towards using SVG more than using an image or using a PNG is that, correct me if I'm wrong, don't they live somehow in the DOM? I mean, they aren't just like an island like an image is.
Yes, SVG, SVG's very nature is amazing. It's an image format, but it's also a document format. So if you have an SVG inline SVG code inside of an HTML page, it practically acts as an iframe.
Mm.
Yeah. So you would have this document inside of the document.
Okay.
This sounds a little complicated, or a little, I would freak out if someone said that.
Well, because in the old days, we would say embed. And the object embedded within the document was usually a whole other universe, and switching between universes was painful.
Well, I'm not really sure what the code looked like when you used embed, but the SVG code is, generally speaking, human readable. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some exceptions if you're working with SVG filters, the FE color matrix, FE composite, whatever. There are some terms, and for example, there's also path data. These are definitely not human readable, but most of it, the tags, the elements, you have circle, you have circ, which stands for circle, rect. Mm. No, actually, there's circle and rect. You have path. These are all elements. You have use, you have G, which means group, you have symbol. All of these elements are human readable. And if you come from an HTML CSS background, if you already know your way around CSS and HTML, mm-hmm. learning SVG, the curve, it's not going to take a lot of time. I can guarantee that.
Okay. So it's a document of its own. I can say, you know, image source equals, and it treat it like an image, but then it doesn't really live in my DOM, and I can't, you know, interact with CSS, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can, yeah, depends on the interaction. If you're only talking about styling, then you can style it if the styles are inside of the SVG. You can even animate it. You can have CSS animations inside of the SVG document, and they would still play when you embed it as an image. But if you have hover interactions, and the hover or any kind of JavaScript or interactions are not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And SVG embedded as an image, but they can work with other embedding techniques.
And you've got a really great series of slides up at slides.com, and it goes over the different embedding techniques, whether it be image, using as a background image, object, iframe, and I would encourage everyone to check that out, and I'll put a link in the show notes.
There are slides about the pros and cons of each techniques. I don't think I've posted slides about including the different fallback techniques. No, that was for my workshop, actually. But at some point, yeah. And there's also my articles that they can check out. There's also CSS Tricks posts a lot of awesome SVG articles as well. So there are a lot of resources out there. If you want to learn SVG, there's practically nothing standing in your way, unless it's you. Maybe you're still not very sure about it. Or if you're working in a company and I don't know. I've never worked in a company, so I don't know what what could possibly cause that. But I can understand if some people just can't. Maybe they want to try it out, but they can't.
Well, I think also that bosses and people who kind of understand what's going on will hear about something like, hey, what about icon fonts? Those are great. Let's do all of our icons in icon fonts.
And I then hate icon fonts.
So then we have to go and ask an expert like you, why should I use SVG icons and not icon fonts?
Well, I don't have all of the reasons out of my head now, but there's this, if you Google SVG icons cage match on CSS Tricks, Chris wrote this big article. It contains a cage match comparison between icon fonts and SVG, and SVG wins hands down. I think the only advantage to icon fonts that I can remember is that support goes back to IE6, but we really shouldn't be supporting IE6 anymore. I know that for some people that's not an option, but indeed, we really should stop. So SVG wins hands down, especially with the fallback techniques.
Well, so there, I think that for me, the fact that they're animatable and interactive, you know, things like hover effects and pushing, you know, push button effects, things like that, makes SVG stand out, certainly as icons. They're going to be, you know, consistent across browsers. And I've had a lot of trouble with icon fonts being a little bit inconsistent from browser to browser.
Yes. And they look great everywhere.
And there's also something to be said, wouldn't you say, about the semantics of these things? And the SVGs are more semantic.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Because if you're marking up an image, you're marking it up as an image instead of using an empty span element, for example, or a div. You have an image and every element inside of that SVG, even text is marked up as text. Now, there are some exceptions if you want to change that yourself, but text is 100% crawlable, searchable, selectable, accessible. It even comes with its own accessibility elements and ARIA labels. It's 100% accessible. So it's perfect. One of my favorite use cases for SVG is graphical text. If you have a text and you have if you want to apply some kind of graphical effect to it, you can do that in SVG while still maintaining the accessibility and searchability and selectability of the text. There is actually an article that was written on Smashing Magazine yesterday that talks just about the different effects that you can create. And it points out that at the beginning of the article that, okay, don't worry about it. It will still be searchable. This is fascinating.
Ah, so you're saying that if I make a letter S and I make a picture of it, that's not accessible in any way. But if I make an S and that S lives as a byte in an SVG, I can then stretch it, move it, apply filters, go nuts.
Yes. Now, if you have a picture of an S, then if you're using the alt attribute on that picture, well, then you can provide some kind of fallback for screen readers. Yeah. But it's not going to be selectable. If you want to change it, you're going to have to create a whole new different image. You can't just jump into the image, the code of that image, and edit it. You can't do that with a JPEG or PNG, for example. But with SVG, you have total control over the contents of the image.
Okay. And then with any SVG document or object, I can apply these filters like lighting sources and things like that and really change the way that they look.
Yes. There are a lot of options. I haven't had the time, unfortunately, to dig into SVG filters as much as I want to, but hopefully at some point, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that with CSS, it's like people will say, don't do that animation in Java and jQuery. Do it in CSS because it's going to be hardware accelerated. Does SVG have a similar kind of situation? Is the browser using SVG more efficiently than other techniques?
Well, it depends. I think I read recently that SMIL, it's synchronized multimedia. It's really hard to memorize.
SMIL?
SMIL, yeah.
Synchronized multimedia integration language.
Yeah, I think it's officially pronounced as SMILE, but I don't understand why it pronounced SMILE without the E at the end. Yeah, so SMIL, I think I read that SMIL performs really well, but SMIL's not supported in any version of Internet Explorer. There are no plans to support it. It's going to be deprecated in Chrome as well. So I'm not really sure about its future anymore. CSS animations on SVG elements are currently not hardware accelerated in most browsers, unfortunately. This is still work in progress, something that we still have Well, we have to wait for browsers to improve on. I think there's Firefox. Firefox, the performance of CSS animations on SVG is not bad. Mm-hmm. I think it's also getting better in Microsoft Edge, but Chrome is still, if you have a lot of complex animations, they can be, well, not very performant on mm-hmm. Chrome.
Yeah, I seem to remember that Chrome is, you know, is always trying to push for both SVG and CSS to be accelerated. I know IE9 was the first browser that added hardware acceleration on SVG. So it seems like SVG is really kind of the web, and it's not a bolt-on technology. It really is mm-hmm. fundamental. Would you say it's, when someone says HTML5, which is such an overloaded term, mm-hmm. SVG is in there, isn't it?
Well, technically, I think, I don't know if some people might agree or disagree on this, if it's in there or not, but for me, yeah, I think it's part of the suit.
Yeah, I think that if I'm saying HTML5, there's an implicit, well, he means CSS3 and HTML5 and SVG, and, you know, modern browsers on the edge, you know, to make a bad pun.
Yeah, I can already hear a lot of people going over the technicalities and being like, SVG is not HTML, so it cannot be part of HTML5, yeah, technically.
But yeah, you know, but when a boss or a suit or a customer, you know, comes to you and says, I want my website to use HTML5, you don't think that they really mean just the elements, right? They mean yes. They want it to be a modern, evergreen environment.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And SVG would fit perfectly in that.
Mm-hmm. And can I use SVG and do responsive design? I can do it on small browsers?
Absolutely. Yes, definitely. There's okay. no question in that.
And does that mean that I'm resizing it dynamically? Or what are the interactions? Do I plug in different SVGs based on what's happening with my browser's size?
No, you don't have to do that. You can make it fluid just like any other image format. For if mm-hmm. you give it, for example, a width 100% and then the page width changes, it's going to change accordingly. Now, in some cases, I would recommend to use different SVGs if the SV, like a while back, my latest article was about using one of SVG's most powerful attributes. It's called Viewbox. You can mm-hmm. use that to crop the SVG to only show different parts of it. So you can do art direction. You can art direct the SVG and only show different parts of that SVG on different screen sizes, which works incredibly, really, really well. But again, in the same client project that I mentioned earlier, there was this big header image and he wanted to show different parts of that image on different screen sizes. So the first thing that I did was, and it literally took me less than a minute, I art directed the SVG using the Viewbox attribute, but the SVG was 200 kilobytes in size. And even after optimizing it, which is something everyone should do if you're using SVG, always optimize them. After optimizing it, I was able to slash the file size down to 100 plus kilobytes, mm-hmm. but that was still too much to serve on smaller screens. So we ended up using three different SVG images and serve the one for mobile and the one for medium. Well, it's still mobile, but for example, small sizes, medium sizes, bigger sizes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this blog post that you did was just last week and it was a really great post because you call out how fundamentally useful it is to be able to dynamically kind of crop and, like you say, art direct, you know?
Yes.
When you imagine the director holding their fingers up like an L and like pretending that they are the camera and saying, well, I want to crop here and then pan out and then zoom. But then you point out later in the post, we can't do this in CSS. This is an SVG specific thing.
Yes. A lot of, right now, today, there's a bunch of SVG attributes that we can set in CSS simply because they are available as CSS properties. And SVG2, there are a lot of extra attributes that are going to be added, which is a huge improvement. But one of the things that I requested based on that article and based on the use case in that article was to get a Viewbox property as well. So I really hope we do get it because we can still do it. We can still art direct the SVG with the Viewbox attribute using JavaScript, for example. But it would be a lot easier. And, you know, why do I have to use JavaScript to just change the Viewbox of an SVG when I would be able to do it in CSS inside of a media query? Mm-hmm. So we have the, not the right, Well, we can suggest features to the SVG working group. And if you have a practical use case, they usually listen. They are really nice people. And like I said, if you have a practical use case, you can send a proposal or an idea, for example, and then they would think it through if it's possible, if it's not possible. And it can end up in a specification, and then the specification could end up implemented. We can change this, but we just have to push it forward.
Yeah, absolutely. You certainly write some amazing blog posts that have extremely compelling and clear, they're almost specifications with animations. They're really a lot more fun. Frankly, it's more fun to read your blog than it is to read the specifications.
Thank you.
Do you just point the W3 people to your post, or do you also go and write a specification that they, the way that they want, or a proposal the way the working group wants?
For the Viewbox property, mm-hmm. I was thinking that I would write the blog post and then I would suggest the feature and then link to my blog post, which would be like an elaboration of the use case and everything. But it turned out that there is already a proposal. It goes, I think, 2 or 3 years back. So the proposal is already there. So I didn't do anything about this in particular.
Well, that's great though, because that means great minds think alike.
Yeah. I think, or as a friend of mine always says, our fools seldom differ.
Well, either way, I think that I want you to know that I appreciate you. I appreciate your writing.
Thank you very much.
It's extremely accessible to overload the word accessible, because all of this is so overwhelming. And when there are really great blog posts and really great books and resources that are made available, you know, for free, you're giving this to us, you know, and this is really what the best of the web is.
Thank you. Well, I love doing it. I've always had this knack for breaking complex subjects down into simpler ones. I used to do it when I was in school, when I was in high school, when I was in college. I always loved that. Like, there were always these hard subjects that not everyone in the class understood. And I was the kind that always asked questions, always. So I ended up, for example, really getting the idea, but a lot of other colleagues didn't. So we used to gather up on breaks and stuff, and I would explain it to them. And it always made me feel amazing. I think this is I don't even know how to describe it. I just really love doing it.
I think you found your calling.
Yeah, that might be it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Sarah Swiden, for chatting with me. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.